Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Call strike three. The Dodgers win. Finally, the wait is over. The Dodgers are the champions of 2020 in a year like no other, where joy has been so hard to come by. Tonight, tears of joy. Let them flow.
The only thing that would have made that better is if Alvin had been on the call. Alvin, how are you not moonlighting with that?
Dude, no.
All right,
no.
So I said I would start with two pieces of sound. One is a clip. One is a song. Alvin, hit me with some Randy Newman if you don't mind. Why am I doing that? Why does anybody do anything? Because they can. And because the LA Dodgers are your 2020 World Series champions. And given how much virtually every last one of you hates the city of Los Angeles, you're really going to hate what I'm about to say. But the city of Los Angeles is the city of champions. Freaking scoreboard, yo. Look yo. Up at it right now.
Yo.
Man, last night was a wild night. Last night was a wild night, and a couple of items from last night will get their own takes. Items like Kevin Cash pulling Blake Snell in the middle of a dominant performance, and an item like Justin Turner testing positive for COVID. But for right now, this is not about Cash and Snell or about MLB, COVID, and Turner. No, for the opening of this program, what this is about is the LA Dodgers being World Series champs. And no, it's not about the commissioner and whatever the hell was happening with him last night. Now you never have to hear about that 32-year drought ever again, because it's over. It is official. The Dodgers finally broke through. The Dodgers are your World Series champions. Or to those of you who speak Spanish, gracias, mi amigo. Clayton Kershaw is a World Series champion. Dave Roberts is a World Series champion. And when that final strike was in the glove of Austin Barnes, the party started in L.A. And L.A. partied hard, because it's been a long time coming. So much pressure was released with that win. There were a bunch of guys in that Dodgers dugout who were playing with a piano strapped to their back. That much pressure. And when that final out was recorded, the piano was picked up and it was smashed. 8 straight divisional titles, going to the World Series in 3 of the last 4 years. And every single year it ends so badly. Every single year it ends in heartbreak. 1 year after another, it ends in pain, misery, second guessing. No wonder this city and the players were partying so hard last night. Because this time it ended with a win. This time it ended the way it should end. Because there was no doubt from the beginning of the year who the best team in baseball was, who the favorite was. If a season was going to be played, the favorite was going to be the Dodgers, especially when they added Mookie Betts. Man, they were so good. They were so dominant that David Price opted out, and they were still the heavy favorites. And they played like it in the regular season. And then when the postseason did roll around, they swept the Padres in the first round. But they then fell behind Atlanta 2-0 and then 3-1. They got cold cocked. That was their first actual adversity that they had faced this year. Now they were tasting their own blood. Now their season was on the brink. Who knew, since they had not faced any adversity at all this season, who knew how this crew was going to react with their backs to the wall? They had not been there before. Pandemic aside, it really had been pretty easy for them this season. It was the Dodgers, and it was everybody else. Nobody could match their depth. Nobody could match their talent. Except Atlanta didn't get that memo. Atlanta had both hands around the Dodgers' collective throats. And then the haters were up on the top step. The haters were on the top step, waiting to run onto the field and bum rush Clayton Kershaw and Dave Roberts and call the Dodgers the biggest chokers ever. But they didn't. They manned the hell up. They came back to win 3 straight against a very good Braves team. Then they get out to that lead in the World Series against the Rays. Then they lose it. Then they get it back. Then they had it ripped from them in the most brutal way possible in game four. So now what? Now it's a best of three. And those same haters were top-stepping it once again, saying not only were the Dodgers not going to finish once again, but this was going to be their biggest tank job ever. Yet they bounce right back in the first inning of game five. They take the lead. Then they went up against some serious filth from Blake Snell last night. They weighed him out. They wrecked the vaunted Rays bullpen as soon as they get the chance. I'm telling you, as soon as Snell left that game last night, there was practically a party in the Dodgers dugout. Man, I wouldn't be surprised if they had broke out the champagne right then and there, because Snell left after Barnes singled, and then Mookie Betts, who was 0-for-2 with two strikeouts against Snell, stepped in and did this.
Back to the top of the order, and Nick Anderson comes into the game. Here's a 2-0. Hard hit and fair. Down the line. Hits the fence. Digging for third is Barnes. They will hold him there on a double by Betts, and the Dodgers are in business in a blink here in the sixth.
Mookie freaking Betts. How stupid do the Red Sox look? How small market do the Red Sox look? That's what you want to do. You want to trade a guy in his prime who may end up in the Hall of Fame one day who loved being there. How stupid does that look? Anyway, all it took was three pitches and one swing to let you know that the Dodgers were going to win that game. The double moved Barnes to third, and then he came home on this.
One out. And this one gets by Zunino. Tie game. Slider. It went the wrong way. And when it goes the wrong way, the catcher cannot be in that position. He's anticipating that ball to break a typical slider break, and it didn't.
Well, that certainly escalated quickly. Kevin Cash, man. Good manager, but he's going to get his own take. He will get an entire take of his own. But it was only a matter of seconds before that move to remove Snell bit him in the ass. Because then Corey Seager broke the time moments later.
Infield still in. Here's a play at the plate. Throw home too late. Dodgers lead. Betts scores. And just like that, the Dodgers are on top by one in the sixth.
2-1 Dodgers. L.A. peaking. They could feel it. And Tampa Bay looked like they'd been punched in the stomach. No, they looked like they'd been kicked in the package. And it's because they had, by their own manager. Julio Urias came into the game for the Dodgers in the eighth. This dude was masterful again. Like, for all the faults of the Dodgers bullpen at times during the playoffs, in games 5 and 6, when it mattered most, they were absolutely massive. And this dude was the biggest horse of all. All filth, no fear. And then in the eighth, look who was there. Mookie freaking Betts.
Here's the 0-2 to Betts. High fly ball left center. Back at the wall, and it's gone. Betts has made it 3-1. Dodgers here in the eighth inning. Mookie with a blast into left center field. Wow, is that a timely home run?
If it sounds like I love Mookie Betts, it's because I love Mookie Betts. This guy's such an amazing player. What a leader. Yeah, I know. You go. You go, Dodger Jim. You think Dodger Jim is feeling it?
You
should have
like
heard Dodger Logan and Dodger Janet last night. I made them watch in another room. That made it 3-1. I know that's only a 2-run lead, and I know the Rays have got tremendous heart and grit, but a 3-1, was there any doubt who was going to win that game? Was there any doubt who was going to win that World Series? Like, the Rays do battle. The Rays never give in. But by then, they had already had their heart ripped out of their chests by their own manager. At that point, a 2-run lead may as well have been a 20-run lead. And now, the Dodgers are the world champs. Now, no more crap about them being chokers. No more crap about them not being able to handle the moment or the big stage. No more junk about them being a great regular season team, but not great when it matters most. Because this year, they were great when it mattered most. And don't even think about coming around here to try to hang an asterisk on this. That is the ultimate in idiocy. That is the ultimate in imbecility. It's just a bad take. It's a bad take, and it's wrong. I mean, sure, you're entitled to your own opinion. But if that's your opinion, you're wrong. The Dodgers were the best team in the regular season. They were the best team in the postseason. They didn't fluke their way to this. In fact, unlike every single other World Series champion, they had to play an extra round. Maybe you should put an asterisk on this. The asterisk to denote that it was tougher than all the other World Series titles to win because of the pandemic, because of the extra round. Because if they lost two games to a good Padres team, none of this even happens. Mookie Betts did not just live up to the hype, he smashed it. Corey Seager came back from an injury and took his game to a whole new level. Cody Bellinger was clutch in the field and at the plate. Walker Buehler, Urias, I can keep going. But if we're being honest, who's it really about? Who was last night really about? Two guys, Clayton Kershaw, Dave Roberts. They're the two guys who have been second-guessed and questioned the most of all. They're the guys who took all the arrows for everybody else. So it's only right that when the Dodgers have the ultimate success, they're the guys who get the ultimate attention. I mean, I don't care if you love Kershaw or you hate Kershaw. It's impossible not to be moved when you see this guy's reaction to the entire thing last night.
Yeah, I was trying to take it all in as best I could. Just looking around and running in front of the bullpen. You know, you never really script what you're going to do or how you're going to feel, but it was a content feeling. Just like a job is done. You know, we won. We did it. We won our race. And it's over, and we completed our mission. Just a feeling of contentment, joy.
Well deserved. Well deserved. Here's another guy who deserved it. Dave Roberts. Dave Roberts is never going to make it about him, but I will. Dave Roberts has always been a damn good manager. You don't have the success that he's had without being a really, really good manager. And he's had to deal with a ton of pressure, too. The kind of pressure that most other managers can't imagine and never have to deal with. Being the Dodgers skipper is much tougher than it looks. It's not just a matter of picking names out of a hat and assembling a lineup and filling out that lineup card every single day. I mean, yes, they are talented. But if you think that's all this guy does, you're an idiot. He's been a damn good manager, and now he's a World Series winning manager. And look at Roberts shouting out to the guys from the stage. Listen to who he shouts out to.
And for guys like Clayton, I couldn't be happier for you, Kersh. Couldn't be happier. You want to talk about a narrative? How about being a champion? He's a champion forever. Kenley Jansen, what you've done. Thank you. Justin Turner, thank you. Rick Honeycutt. Rick Honeycutt is not here. Thank you. Ross Stripling, who's not here. Thank you. And to every single one of you guys, I love you so much for all your work, your care, your unselfishness. Congratulations, you guys.
This guy's the best. Did you catch who he shouted out to? Rick Honeycutt, who was not with the team in Texas. Ross Stripling, who was traded in August. He's thanking a guy who was in the postseason for a different team. But in that moment, when he was on top of the mountain and he could have told the entire world to kiss his ass, instead, he's up there thanking guys who aren't even there. This is what I mean when I say Dave Roberts is never going to make it about him. When he could have been telling everybody, how do you like me right now? When he had every right to ask, tell me how my ass tastes.
Tell me how my ass tastes.
He's shouting out to guys that everybody else would forget and are not thinking about. This is what makes Dave Roberts the man he is. This is why people love Dave Roberts. And that's a big reason why the Dodgers are World Series champions. So you better put some respect on this guy. And to the question of, did the actual feeling live up to the actual expectation? Kershaw says it smashed it.
I've been saying, you know, World Series champs in my head over and over again, just to see if it'll sink in. And I'm just so very thankful to be a part of this group of guys, and so very thankful that we get to be on the team that is bringing back a World Series to the Dodger fans after 32 years. They've waited a long time, and to get to do that, you couldn't ask for anything more. It's incredible.
Hey, listen, did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? October is, in fact, Fire Prevention Month, and we have teamed up with First Alert, the most trusted brand in fire safety, to help you get ready for the unexpected and review some key safety tips. Smoke and carbon monoxide alarms help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. And having enough First Alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms is one of the very best things that you can do for your family. What you want to do is make sure you install alarms on every single level and in every single bedroom of your home. Once the alarms are installed, It is important to maintain them by testing them with regularity. Remember, alarms do not last forever. They do need to be replaced every 10 years. If you can't remember the last time that you replaced yours, it is best just to replace that unit completely. And my favorite replacement option is the First Alert Combination Smoke and Carbon Monoxide Alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. This alarm provides 2-in-1 protection against smoke and carbon monoxide both. And I don't even have to change the batteries for a decade. I love that. Also, remember, take this time and discuss home safety with your family. Plan and practice an escape route, and remember to practice that at least twice a year. And for more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at home with your family, just go to firstalert.com/fireprevention month. I've done this with my family. We continue to do so. You should too. It is Carlos Pena, and he is back. Carlos, my man, it's so good to have you on the show once again. How are you?
Man, what can I say, Jim? Really happy to be back with you in the show, but I have to say that I'm having a very tough time digesting and assimilating what happened last night, man. But more importantly, not what happened, but how it happened. I'm struggling with that.
Why don't we talk about that, Carlos? Because you did tweet that last night, and I was going to say, how are you feeling this morning? But you just said it again. I think it's a great line. I'm having a hard time assimilating the Rays lost, and not so much what happened, but how it happened. So as you start to process that, how are you feeling this morning? What kind of thoughts do you have about what you saw last night?
This is the thing, Jim. I mean, why do we love sports? Why do we love baseball? It's precisely because it lends itself to, you know, amazing narratives. We can see ourselves through these athletes, you know, and when these athletes rise to the occasion and conquer a moment and become heroes, that's why we tune in every single night to watch baseball, to watch football, basketball, whatever it is. It's because it allows us to dream. It allows us to live through these athletes and see how, you know, they conquer the impossible, right? But, you know, last night, it wasn't even that much of a leap of faith to leave Snell in the game. I mean, he was dominating the Dodgers. I mean, I've never seen the Dodgers really have a tough, you know, that much of a tough time as they were having last night with Snell. So it's not like Cash would have been taking this huge leap of faith and leaving him in, right? I understand that, you know, if you look at the Rays' DNA as far as how they go about their business, they've been praised on this, you know, Cash particularly, on how they make decisions based on analytics, and they are cold-blooded when it comes to that. There's different lineups every single night, and they have been celebrated because of the success they've had with a small payroll, precisely because of how smart they are and how they utilize their analytics department, and they utilize every single resources effectively, every single of the resources effectively on a nightly basis. But come on, man. Game 6 of the World Series, you have your horse out there pitching absolutely a gem, and you take away the baseball from him, and you don't give him a chance to either experience defeat or victory. I mean, no victory. It was just like, you know what, I'm taking it all away. I don't even want to do a chance at succeeding or failing. That to me, I'm having such a difficult time assimilating it, accepting it, because that's why we love baseball. And the ball was taken away from Snell at one of the crucial moments in his career and possibly race history.
Carlos Pena is my guest. Carlos, I can hear it, obviously. I mean, you are having a great deal of trouble assimilating this right now. If you yourself, and I understand why you are, if you yourself are having this much of an issue assimilating this today, how do you think the players, Snell and his teammates, are feeling right now? How much trouble are they having assimilating this?
Oh, they're having an incredibly tough time. I mean, think about it. We play baseball, right? We try to become professional baseball players. And if we were to look at the numbers, we wouldn't even try because the numbers are stacked against us. So let's start with that. You know, all these guys, you know, most of them, they weren't, you know, given things on a silver platter. They had to fight to get to the point where they're at this moment. So it's precisely the ability of an athlete to defy all odds that make them so good. Right? That is precisely why they are at the level that they're at. So when the moment, the climax is about to be reached of the moment, you're going to do a record scratch and say, not so much, give me the ball, because a computer says so? Look, let's face it, guys. I mean, if you look at the evidence, it's quite overwhelming as far as, you know, the stats are concerned. You know, the third time around the lineup, universally, all pitchers have a tougher time later in the game than they do early in the game. Snell particularly had a tougher time late in the game than early in the game. But you have to be able to err on the side of aggressiveness in baseball. And I remember Joe Maddon used to say that all the time. We err on the side of aggressiveness. Right here, they were erring on the side of caution, almost timid, to make sure that you don't make a mistake. And that's not the way to play any sports, and certainly not baseball. And that's why I'm having such a difficult time accepting the way the Rays lost last night. And I know that the players are heartbroken, specifically Snell. And it's going to take a while for him to shake that off. I mean, I know how much of a competitor he is. And the ability to compete, the opportunity to compete, was taken away from him.
Carlos Pena joining us. Carlos, I can see exactly what you're saying. Do you think Snell knew, like, when you see that Cash is coming out of the dugout with a purpose, everybody knows what's going to happen, why he's going out to the bump, he's not going to talk it through with Snell, he's coming to get the baseball. Was there anything that Snell could have said to talk his way into staying?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think he could have said many things. Now, the question is whether Cash was going to accept it. See, this is the thing. You know, Jim, I read a lot, you know, and yesterday I was just thinking about Sun Tzu, you know, and the art of war.
Sure.
And he always talks about, you know, military formation being like water, meaning that there's no constant formation. Water has no constant shape. You have to be able to adapt based on the situation that you're encountering. So even though you have a strategy set before the game, which was pretty much written out, you know, by the Rays, they knew what they wanted to do. Snell, give me five, and then after that, I'm going to go to Anderson. You have to get a feel for what's happening in the moment if you're going to be victorious, if you're going to be successful. You cannot be so rigid and pretty much trust blindly, you know, intellect or data. You know, that's what I call the arrogance of intellect that could come back to bite you in moments like this. And last night was a perfect example of that. You know, what happened to grit? What happened to having a heart, you know, in the moment? You know, to rise to the occasion, allow the hero to rise to the occasion and conquer. Sports, that's why we love sports. And last night, it was pretty much the perfect example on how all these data-driven front offices are taken away from the fun of the game. It's so tough to see such an awesome team and an awesome story, awesome narrative that should have been allowed to play itself through. Just play it out. It was like you took the pencil away from a, you know, divine writer, you know, that was writing a pretty good script here going in. You know, Snell goes out there, you know, finishes the game, 1-0 victory, game 7 wins, you know, Rays have a shot at winning the World Series in the most unlikeliest of X scenarios. And yet, it you know, here we are, you know, World Series over, Dodgers are the champs.
Carlos Pena joining us. You know, Carlos, to that point you just made, I don't want to make things even worse, but if the Rays do win last night and Blake Snell is untouchable, if they win last night and they force a game 7, then you've got Charlie Morton going in game 7 with all the pressure on the Dodgers. How good would you have felt about the Rays' chances of winning it all then if they do get to a game 7?
Yeah, that is precisely why this carries so much weight. You know, yesterday's decision taking Snell out, now all of a sudden it's a chain effect. And, you know, another one of the things, we understand momentum. Momentum is real. So when you seize opportunities, more opportunities present themselves, right? Now, right there, going into that inning, you know, I said it. You know, I knew that, you know, Cash is so loyal to these statistics that I knew that if Snell walked the batter, if Snell gave up a hit, he was going to go get him. And now I think that is the absolute wrong decision, because by no means was he in trouble. But now if you fast forward and you say, wait a second, Morton was going to go game 7. Now the pressure is 100% on the Dodgers, and it's overwhelmingly so, very difficult to deal with. And now I really like the chances of the Rays. When you feel the weight of the narrative building up, Jim, as athletes, we know. I mean, you know what you're up against. It's something that is hard to quantify, but you feel it. You're like, wow, our backs are against the wall. And we're not only playing against, per se, the Rays, you're playing against this momentum that has been building. And that's why right now it's going to be very, very difficult for these guys to get over the fact that they were in the World Series and that a decisive moment was made, you know, the decision was made to prevent failure. So in a sense, fearing failure instead of being aggressive and going for the win. That's what's difficult right here, especially when you have Snell that's just locked in one of your horses, one of the better pitchers of the race, Cy Young Award winner, the latest Cy Young Award winner, and you took the ball away from him. So that is just too painful. I mean, I think you can hear it in my voice.
Well, I can. We all can.
I've had a tough time.
I see you working. I can hear it in your voice. I understand this. What I wonder, Carlos Pena, my guest, and I do appreciate you coming on today. I wonder organizationally where the Rays go from here. In other words, do they look at this? When they look at this, will they say, we live and die with our process. We can live with this. You do not deviate from the process. Or will they look at this and say, hey, you know what? Maybe we need to tweak the process. Maybe we need to rethink the process.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, you know. But at the end of the day, look, we cannot deny that the numbers are helpful. But when you give up your sovereignty and you basically say, you know, we're going to let statistics rule the game, then that's where I think you've gone to the excess. And that's the point of no return. That's the point of diminishing returns at that moment. And you have to leave yourself a little bit of room. And look, let's just flip it to this. Look at what, you know, the Dodgers did. And look at Roberts. You know, allowing Urias not only to finish and pitch, you know, extend Urias on the, you know, NLCS, right? So he goes on extra innings, you know, that he would have, if you were to follow the book of his statistics, he would have gone to the bullpen and gone somebody else. But instead, he left Urias there. Last night, he did it again. So, in a sense, Roberts went with his gut, went with the observation, not just numbers. But then you look at Cash, and he was so rigid with those numbers that he says, even though I know Snell looks good, he says he feels good, he's dominating the Dodger lineup, I am going to remain loyal to the numbers, and I'm going to let the numbers dictate my decisions. See the difference? Now, right. The Dodgers are champions. The Rays fell short. That's the matter, but it could have been different. At the end of the day, we don't know what would have happened, but having that be the deciding factor, a machine, a formula, that's a hard pill to swallow.
Carlos Pena, my guest. So, Carlos, finally, what was your reaction when you heard that Justin Turner had been removed from the game in the eighth inning after testing positive for COVID?
Yeah, I was like, are you serious? You know, and then at the end of the day, you know, you think about the fact that he had been in the game. The tests at the beginning were inconclusive. Just the wrong, you really didn't even want to hear that. That's the last thing you wanted to hear. You know, it's been weeks since we've had a positive test in the major leagues. They've done an amazing job at keeping everyone safe and remaining within the parameters and protocols that would have been set. So this is the last thing baseball needed. Hopefully now when we see that all the tests coming through, you know, there won't be any more complications, but just truly bad news. And I'm hoping for the best in a sense.
A 14-year MLB vet, an all-star, a gold glover, a silver slugger, an AL home run champion, an AL comeback player of the year award winner in 2007. And in the process of assimilating something that was very difficult to see, Carlos, my friend, I know that you're having a tough morning. I really do appreciate your thoughts on that, and I appreciate the commentary very much. Appreciate the friendship. I know that next time we talk, you'll be in a much better spot, but I do appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts today very much.
Jim, it's always a pleasure to join you, man. I'll get over this, but it's tough. You know, I have a, I'll tell you this, and I'll leave you with this. I have two sons, right? And my oldest, I mean, he could not stop sobbing yesterday when Blake Snell was taken out of the game. And when you see, you know, a kid's heart broken like that, you kind of understand the magnitude of the moment and how much it means to the fans of Tampa Bay. So needless to say, a very sad day over here in Florida. And nothing, we're going to have to shake it off, but it's going to take some time.
I know a number of you listening are business owners. If you are, you do not need to tell us that running a business is tough. It is really tough. But you might be making it tougher on yourself than it has to be. Don't let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down any longer. It is time for you to upgrade. Upgrade to NetSuite. Stop paying for multiple systems that do not give you the information you need when you need it. Get rid of the spreadsheets and all that old software. Get rid of the spreadsheets and all the old software that's bogging you down that you've outgrown. Now is the time to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, and it's all in one place, and you get it instantaneously. So whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time and money with NetSuite. Join the over 21,000 companies that are using NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/Rome. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Rome. Once again, netsuite.com/ROME. The Rays could not have gotten off to a better start when Randy Arozarena did this in the top of the first.
For Gonsolin against Arozarena. Here's one into right. That ball will carry back at the wall. It is gone. Arozarena has put Tampa Bay on top as he flicks one into the seats and right onto the tarp. And it's 1-0 Tampa Bay as he has his 10th postseason home run.
10. So that gets out of there in a hurry. That was then followed up by a single and a walk. And at that point, it felt like Tony Gonsolin was already eating punches, unable to defend himself, up against the ropes, and he was going to get knocked the hell out. Already allowing a home run. Runners on first and second. One out. It felt like that game was going to be blown wide open before the first inning even ended. I mean, that had all the hallmarks, and it had the look of a 10-3 beatdown for the Rays in a Game 7 tonight. Except somehow, some way, Gonsolin managed to get out of the inning with only that one run. But the one run did seem pretty massive when you see what Blake Snell was doing on the mound. Because Snell didn't just keep the Dodgers from scoring, he had them absolutely locked up. I mean, he was toying with them. He was disgusting. The guy was revolting. Or as Cody Bellinger said after the game, he was, quote, gross. First inning, strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. Mookie Betts on 5 pitches. Corey Seager on 3. Justin Turner on 4. Second inning, ground out. Strikeout, strikeout. Fourth inning, strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. Another 1-2-3 in the fifth. And then you get to the sixth. Snell gets A.J. Pollock on a pop-up. Then Austin Barnes singles to center. And then comes a moment that will go down in Rays history and World Series history.
Man, you're talking about a short leash. 73 pitches, 2 hits, 9 strikeouts. Snell can't believe it. As Kevin Cash said, these guys need short memories and thick skin because this is the way we do it. Back to the top of the order, and Nick Anderson comes into the game.
I mean, the moment Cash moved in the dugout before he even left that dugout, before he sprinted out to the dugout or from the dugout, I mean, you knew exactly what was going to happen. And so did Snell, because his reaction shot was a massive expletive. Kevin Cash was not coming out to the bump to talk things over with Snell. He was coming to get him out of there. Blake Snell struck out 9. He had struck out 9 Dodger batters through 5 1/3 in a must-win game. And Cash came with the hook the second he allowed a second base hit. And it's not like this guy was laboring. He had thrown 73 pitches to that point. 73 and done. But this is who Tampa Bay is. This is what Tampa Bay does. This is where Tampa Bay lives. This is why Tampa Bay was even in Game 6 of the World Series. This is their bleeping deal. Kevin Cash came to get Charlie Morton in Game 7 of the ALCS. And afterwards he said, quote, third time through, we value that. We value our process, end quote. As I said, nobody values anything like the Rays value their process. And it's true. It is what got them there. And I'll tell you what else is true. It's what ended their season. You knew they were going to stick to their process, just as you knew that that process was going to crush them the moment the Cash came for Snell. It's almost like he offended the baseball gods by doing that. It's almost like Cash and the Rays crossed a line last night. Like they spit in the face of every dominant ace in a postseason game ever. And it came back to bite them in the ass. I mean, not to go all boomer on you, but can you imagine Cash coming out to the bump to try to take the ball from Bob Gibson in the World Series? Like, hey, you know the rules, Bob. Third time through the lineup. Process, Bob. Process.
Trust the process.
Like, Bob Gibson would have broke his manager's face before he let him take the ball from him in that moment. I mean, yeah, I understand. Very different time. Time's changed. The game has changed dramatically. But you know, as much as Snell likes and respects Cash, he wanted to give him the hands and not the ball. Because you do not take out a pitcher who is that dominant in that big of a moment. Sure, the process works. Don't get me wrong. However, last night was the night to deviate from the process. Of course, they would tell you that the process is a process because you don't deviate from it. Hey, look, you can rant at Cash and the Rays all you want about how computers and analytics are ruining the game and that there needs to be space for gut instinct. And they'll nod and they'll say they understand exactly what you're saying, but then they'll stick to their process like they always do. They do not want opposing hitters to see their pitchers for a third time. Man, they have made that so clear. And they've got the numbers and the computers and the Ivy League nerds to back it all up. And very obviously, it does not matter to them how well their pitcher is doing against those hitters. Because in this case, Snell could not have been doing any better. Nobody could have been. Betts, Seager, Turner, they were a combined 0-for-6 with 6 strikeouts. He had struck them out 6 times. They had no answers for this guy. They couldn't touch this guy. They had no chance against this guy. And Cash says, yeah, I understand why some people might be questioning our process.
I totally respect and understand the questions that come with it. Blake gave us every opportunity to win. He was outstanding. They're not easy decisions. Didn't want Mookie or Seager seeing Blake a third time. There was no set plan. As much as people think that sometimes, there's no set plan.
All right, hold up there. Hold up there, Skip. Hold up there. I understand the first part, but come on with that second part. Of course there was a set plan. That's what a process is, a set plan. We know your set plan. Everybody knows your set plan. The plan is you don't want your guys seeing your guys or their guys seeing your guys for a third at bat. That's your set plan. We know this. And if there really is no set plan, and there is, but if there really is no set plan, that makes the decision even worse. If there's no set plan, that means you made a horrible decision. At least blame that horrible decision on the fact that we have a plan. We work our plan. We plan our work. Otherwise, we're talking about some terrible improvisation, a terrible decision. Because he didn't just take out Snell. He brought in a right-hander to face Betts. For the record, Betts has struggled against lefties this year, but he eats up righties. Not only did you bring in that guy to face Betts, but you brought in a guy who had given up a run in 6 straight appearances. Yeah, I know Nick Anderson wasn't beast in the regular season, but in the postseason, this guy's been meat. No wonder the Dodgers were having a party in the dugout. Kevin Cash made their night. Kevin Cash helped them win a ring. Betts admitted as much.
Man, it was kind of like a sigh of relief. Had he stayed in that game, he may have
pitched him for the game, and I don't know exactly what would have happened, but he was rolling, and he was pitching really, really well. You know, that's the Cy Young Snell that came tonight. So, you know, once he came out of the game, it just, you know, like I said, it was just a breath of fresh air.
They're not even pretending. They're literally saying, oh, yeah, we were happy. Oh, hell yes, we were happy. We couldn't touch this guy. In other words, the Dodgers were about ready to send Cash one of their bottles of Cristal. Hell, never mind a bottle of champagne. How about a World Series ring as a thank you gift? Dave Roberts admitted he was happy. Quote, I was pretty happy because he was dominating us and we just weren't seeing him. We were all kind of excited that Snell was out of the game. End quote. His counterpart just said it for the record. So that process, you want to trust the process. You want to tell me that without that process, we're not here. That's fine. That's fine. But you got to be able to deviate from the process. Because while that process may have gotten you there, that process got you beaten last night. That's period.
That's fine.
Don't hide behind the process. That was a bad decision. That was the wrong decision. And you knew it the second he made it. The Dodgers knew it the second he made it. The Rays knew it the second he made it. Deviate from the process. He is Xander Schauffele. Xander, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So it's been a minute or two since you and I have spoken, and this has been such an unusual year for golf and for life. So bring me up to date. How are you doing, and what has the year been like for you personally?
Yeah, I'm doing well. You know, I think I wouldn't say things are back to normal, but in terms of, you know, competing and being able to do sort of what I like to do, it's somewhat back to normal. Obviously, no fans out in the course is still a bummer. We're about to compete next month, and or actually it's in 2 weeks at Augusta, and that'll be very strange with no fans. So it's been, you know, a year of adjustment, but for the most part, I'd say I've been able to kind of keep a clear head for the most part and not, you know, get too caught up in things.
Xander Schauffele joining us. I'll ask you about the Masters in one moment, but bring me up to date about your game. For example, you finished second or tied for second at the Tour Championship, then fifth at the U.S. Open, second at the CJ Cup, etc. It's a really nice run of results. How would you describe where your game is right now?
It's good. I think it's we had a lot of downtime sort of during COVID with the quarantine and coming back. It, you know, I think all of us have played sort of 14 of the last 20 weeks, roughly, some more, some a little less, but definitely been competing a lot, and the game feels, you know, competition ready. I got home and I took a few days off after the US Open, and then I just got home after 2 weeks doing the CJ Cup in Zozo and in Vegas and LA. So it was nice to be on the West Coast and, you know, a quick trip back home and a few days off, and I'll get back on the horse here shortly preparing for Augusta.
Xander Schauffele is joining us. You made the point also that you don't necessarily have to be swinging a club to get better at your craft. So when the season was paused earlier this year, how'd you go about approaching that time and making sure that that time was best used and not wasted?
Well, my girlfriend helped a lot with that. We had one dog, and then we were able to get another dog. And so it was a bit of a struggle the first month, in all honesty, just being completely locked down here in San Diego. I'm sure you're very aware of what that felt like. Going on walks with the dogs, just trying to get outdoors, being trapped inside is no good. Gyms being closed, golf courses being closed. It was a forced break for me, which may have been a good thing. Now that I look at it, you know, I came out of the quarantine time probably playing better than I did pre-quarantine or pre-COVID. So just kind of keeping a clear head, kind of just trying to, you know, keep my sanity for what felt like the first month and a half. And then after that, I sort of started to, you know, was able to kind of work out a little bit more and then start golfing again. So I think, you know, I give a lot of credit to my dogs and my girlfriend for sort of dragging me through this, you know, strange time when we were locked up.
There you go. Xander Schauffele joining us. You know, I had Jason Kokrak on the show last week after his win at the CJ Cup, and he was talking about the fact that the two of you were chatting it up quite a bit during the final round. Like, not every guy would be up for a conversation during a final round with the guy they're going up against. What were those conversations like for you?
They were, you know, they definitely, we were chatting more so early in the round. Jason Day, unfortunately, sort of had a neck injury, so he pulled out, and pace of play was super slow. At Shadow Creek, it's not really a course you're supposed to walk. So rounds were taking, you know, call it 5.5 hours to 5:45 to play. And we were just chatting, you know. Jason's a super chill guy. Our caddies got along. It was just the two of us sort of playing in a super slow tournament. So we were aware he plays really fast. He plays faster than I do. I'm kind of middle of the pack in terms of pace, but we were just talking about anything. You know, we both realized that it's going to be a super long day and we need to sort of keep ourselves distracted and try and play good golf. And all of a sudden, you know, both of us are making birdies and then coming down the stretch conversations, you know, it was still friendly, but you know, we definitely weren't talking as much because it was sort of, we're both trying to win this tournament and we're both right in there in the hunt. So definitely happy for him. After the round, they interviewed me saying it's Jason Kokrat's first win. And I was like, you know, BS. Like I just never realized that he didn't win before because he was so calm and cool under the gun there with the last few holes.
Classy of you, Xander Schauffele joining us. You know, earlier in the year, also, you told Golf Talk, being in the U.S. Open sectional qualifying back in 2017, and you saw Steve Stricker out there just grinding it out, and then afterwards, the two of you had a chat. What do you remember about that conversation, and what did you take away from that? Why was that significant?
It was significant because one, Strick is one of our all-time greats in our game. And it was a tournament where it was a qualifying tournament that he had to get through to play in his hometown. And so it was cool to see me to see one of the greats of our game try his absolute best like a kid, you know what I mean, at a Muni course again, just trying to get through this qualifier so he can play at home in front of his fans, in front of his family. So I just remember feeding off of his energy. He kept his head down. We chatted a little bit during the 36 holes. It was just a long, you know, US Open qualifiers are, they're not really fun. They're just 36 holes and you're just kind of drained actually at the, or it was 18. What was it? I think it was 36 holes. Yeah. You're just drained at the end of the day. And after the round, you know, I squeezed through and he had a lot of nice words to say to me, just, you know, kind of saying, hey, your game's good enough. Like I was a rookie on tour, didn't really amount to anything at that point. And he kind of told me, you know, you're good enough and you got enough game, just keep your head down. And so it was reassuring for me to hear that from, you know, one of our greats in our game, especially Steve Stricker. And so I went to the US Open sort of with that momentum of, you know, playing with Strick and playing good golf and him sort of giving me a pat on the back saying, just keep your head down and push through. And the US Open sort of changed my life.
It's a good story. Xander Schauffele joining us. He's working with Highland today, which we will talk about momentarily. I do have to ask you, though, you were on the President's Cup team last year. You played all five matches. You went 3-2. You beat Adam Scott in singles. As you look back, what was that entire experience like?
It was tiring. You know, it was awesome, though. Like, when I look back, I just remember how tired I was. You know, we're all trying to celebrate at the end, but we were so far back. We're getting our you know, butts kicked for quite some time, and just a swing of emotions from us keep, you know, us trying to push and push and push and trying to, you know, get the cup. And it was a cool feeling, you know, nothing I really experienced before, just being, you know, golf being an individual sport and it turning into a team sport, all of us sort of not wanting to beat each other, but come together for the same cause. So it was a very unique experience and I can totally see why guys really are bummed out when they miss on any, you know, opportunity to play on a team.
All right, so you mentioned the Masters. We're about 2 weeks out. What kind of thoughts do you have when it comes to the Masters? How do you think it's going to be or feel to be playing that in November?
Different. I'm going to, you know, go out there Sunday, get tested. Right now, the biggest thing, you know, besides practicing is making sure I don't get COVID. You know, that's the only thing holding me back from, you know, playing in the Masters. So, It'll be an interesting, I think no fans will really sink in once we're on property. It's just from the par three contest to skipping your golf ball in 16 with fans to just practice rounds. It'll feel very strange, I think. I do feel bad, you know, for people going to Augusta for the first time, it being completely empty. But, you know, at the same time, it is still the Masters. It is still a major championship and there's still a lot at stake. So I think, you know, once we get over the fact that it's, you know, completely quiet out there and it'll feel like a museum, we'll be, you know, good to go game day.
I'm kind of curious, Tanner. You just said that one of the big things, of course, is in getting ready for the tournament, you don't want to get COVID. Like, you and your girlfriend, are you guys, do you get the occasional meal out if you can eat outdoors? Do you keep a tight circle of friends? Like, exactly how are you approaching it socially?
Yeah, it's bad. You know, as soon as I, you know, you'll hear of some cases where people will get it and they have no symptoms, but then, you know, Tony Finau last week got it, or Shriner's got it. And he was out. You know, Tony's in great shape, works out all the time, and he still can't taste anything. And then Adam Scott, I just saw him and his, Adam Scott got it in LA. He was super careful. He just had a baby, so he was super careful about not getting it. And he got it over in Switzerland, I think. So he was quarantining in the hotel that I was at. And he was out. He had a fever and, you know, chills and everything else. So I feel that, you know, my girlfriend and I take pretty good, you know, measures to make sure that, you know, there's no, you know,
conversation with a PGA Tour golfer. He is a four-time winner on the PGA Tour, the 2017 PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. He is currently number 7 in the world golf rankings. He is number 9 in the FedEx Cup standings. He is a President's Cup winner. He is appearing today on behalf of Highland. He is Xander Schauffele. Xander, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So it's been a minute or two since you and I have spoken, and this has been such an unusual year for golf and for life. So bring me up to date. How are you doing, and what has the year been like for you personally?
Yeah, I'm doing well. You know, I think I wouldn't say things are back to normal, but in terms of, you know, competing and being able to do sort of what I like to do, it's somewhat back to normal. Obviously, no fans out in the course is still a bummer. We're about to compete next month, and or actually it's in 2 weeks at Augusta, and that'll be very strange with no fans. So it's been, you know, a year of adjustment, but for the most part, I'd say I've been able to kind of keep a clear head for the most part and not, you know, get too caught up in things.
Xander Schauffele joining us. I'll ask you about the Masters in one moment, but bring me up to date about your game. For example, you finished 2nd or tied for 2nd at the Tour Championship, then 5th at the U.S. Open, 2nd at the CJ Cup, etc. It's a really nice run of results. How would you describe where your game is right now?
It's good. I think it's we had a lot of downtime sort of during COVID with the quarantine and coming back. It, you know, I think all of us have played sort of 14 of the last 20 weeks, roughly, some more, some a little less, but I've definitely been competing a lot, and the game feels, you know, competition ready. I got home and I took a few days off after the US Open, and then I just got home after 2 weeks doing the CJ Cup in Zozo and in Vegas and LA. So it was nice to be on the West Coast and, you know, a quick trip back home and a few days off, and I'll get back on the horse here shortly preparing for Augusta.
Xander Schauffele is joining us. You made the point also that you don't necessarily have to be swinging a club to get better at your craft. So when the season was paused earlier this year, how'd you go about approaching that time and making sure that that time was best used and not wasted?
Well, my girlfriend helped a lot with that. We had one dog, and then we were able to get another dog. And so it was a bit of a struggle the first month, in all honesty, just being completely locked down here in San Diego. I'm sure you're very aware of what that felt like. Going on walks with the dogs, just trying to get outdoors, being trapped inside is no good. Gyms being closed, golf courses being closed. It was a forced break for me, which may have been a good thing. Now that I look at it, you know, I came out of the quarantine time probably playing better than I did pre-quarantine or pre-COVID. So just kind of keeping a clear head, kind of just trying to, you know, keep my sanity for what felt like the first month and a half. And then after that, I sort of started to, you know, was able to kind of work out a little bit more and then start golfing again. So I think, you know, I give a lot of credit to my dogs and my girlfriend for sort of dragging me through this, you know, strange time when we were locked up.
There you go. Xander Schauffele joining us. You know, I had Jason Kokrak on the show last week after his win at the CJ Cup, and he was talking about the fact that the two of you were chatting it up quite a bit during the final round. Like, not every guy would be up for a conversation during a final round with the guy they're going up against. What were those conversations like for you?
They were, you know, they definitely, we were chatting more so early in the round. Jason Day, unfortunately, sort of had a neck injury, so he pulled out, and pace of play was super slow. at Shadow Creek. It's not really a course you're supposed to walk. So rounds were taking, you know, call it 5.5 hours to 5:45 to play. And we were just chatting, you know. Jason's a super chill guy. Like our caddies got along. It was just the two of us sort of playing in a super slow tournament. So we were aware he plays really fast. He plays faster than I do. I'm kind of middle of the pack in terms of pace, but we were just talking about anything. You know, we both realized that it's going to be a super long day and we need to sort of keep ourselves distracted and try and play good golf. And all of a sudden, you know, both of us are making birdies and then coming down the stretch conversations, you know, it was still friendly, but you know, we definitely weren't talking as much because it was sort of, we're both trying to win this tournament and we're both right in there in the hunt. So definitely happy for him. After the round, they interviewed me saying, is Jason Kokrat's first win? And I was like, you know, BS. Like I just never realized that he didn't win before, because he was so calm and cool under the gun there with the last few holes.
Classy of you, Xander Schauffele, joining us. You know, earlier in the year, also, you told Golf Doc, being in the U.S. Open sectional qualifying back in 2017, and you saw Steve Stricker out there just grinding it out, and then afterwards, the two of you had a chat. What do you remember about that conversation, and what did you take away from that? Why was that significant?
It was significant because, one, Strick is one of, you know, one of our all-time greats in our game. And it was a tournament where it was a qualifying tournament that he had to get through to play in his hometown. And so it was cool to see me, or it was cool for me to see one of the greats of our game try his absolute best like a kid, you know what I mean, at a Muni course again, just trying to get through this qualifier so he can play at home in front of his fans, in front of his family. So I just remember feeding off of his energy. He kept his head down. We chatted a little bit during the 36 holes. It was just a long, you know, US Open qualifiers are, they're not really fun. They're just 36 holes and you're just kind of drained actually at the, or it was 18. What was it? I think it was 36 holes. Yeah. You're just drained at the end of the day. And after the round, you know, I squeezed through and he had a lot of nice words to say to me, just, you know, kind of saying, hey, your game's good enough. Like I was a rookie on tour, didn't really amount to anything at that point. And he kind of told me, you know, you're good enough and you got enough game, just keep your head down. And so it was reassuring for me to hear that from, you know, one of our greats in our game, especially Steve Stricker. And so I went to the US Open sort of with that momentum of, you know, playing with Strick and playing good golf and him sort of giving me a pat on the back saying, just keep your head down and push through. And the US Open sort of changed my life.
It's a good story. Xander Schauffele joining us. He's working with Highland today, which we will talk about momentarily. I do have to ask you, though, you were on the President's Cup team last year. You played all five matches. You went 3-2. You beat Adam Scott in singles. As you look back, what was that entire experience like?
It was tiring. You know, it was awesome, though. Like, when I look back, I just remember how tired I was. You know, we're all trying to celebrate at the end, but we were so far back. We're getting our you know, butts kicked for quite some time, and just a swing of emotions from us us trying to push and push and push and trying to, you know, get the cup. And it was a cool feeling, you know, nothing I really experienced before, just being, you know, golf being an individual sport and it turning into a team sport, all of us sort of not wanting to beat each other, but come together for the same cause. So it was a very unique experience, and I can totally see why guys really are bummed out when they miss on any, you know, opportunity to play on a team.
All right, so you mentioned the Masters. We're about 2 weeks out. What kind of thoughts do you have when it comes to the Masters? How do you think it's going to be or feel to be playing that in November?
Different. I'm going to, you know, go out there Sunday, get tested. Right now, the biggest thing, you know, besides practicing is making sure I don't get COVID. You know, that's the only thing holding me back from, you know, playing in the Masters. So, It'll be an interesting, I think no fans will really sink in once we're on property. It's just from the par three contest to skipping your golf ball in 16 with fans to just practice rounds. It'll feel very strange, I think. I do feel bad, you know, for people going to Augusta for the first time, it being completely empty. But, you know, at the same time, it is still the Masters. It is still a major championship and there's still a lot at stake. So I think, you know, once we get over the fact that it's, you know, completely quiet out there and it'll feel like a museum, we'll be, you know, good to go game day.
I'm kind of curious, Xander. You just said that one of the big things, of course, is in getting ready for the tournament, you don't want to get COVID. Like you and your girlfriend, are you guys, do you get the occasional meal out if you can eat outdoors? Do you keep a tight circle of friends? Like exactly how are you approaching it socially?
Yeah, it's bad. You know, as soon as I, you know, you'll hear of some cases where people will get it and they have no symptoms, but then, you know, Tony Finau last week got it, or Shriner's got it. And he was out. You know, Tony's in great shape, works out all the time, and he still can't taste anything. And then Adam Scott, I just saw him and his, Adam Scott got it in LA. He was super careful. He just had a baby, so he was super careful about not getting it. And he got it over in Switzerland, I think. So he was quarantining in the hotel that I was at, and he was out. He had a fever and, you know, chills and everything else. So I feel that, you know, my girlfriend and I take pretty good, you know, measures to make sure that, you know, there's no, you know, sort of random people coming in and out of our place. Not that anyone random ever comes in and out of our place, but we don't really eat out. I mean, I've eaten out outdoors in San Diego, you know, a handful of times now. You know, just Maya and I, or I mean, maybe a couple friends, but those friends will, they're kind enough to go get tested. So I am kind of, you know, weird about it in all honesty, but to me, it's like, you know, the goal is to get to the Masters and win the Masters. So if I get COVID, then that's totally out the window. So I will be sort of kind of weird about it from, you know, until then.
I cannot wait to tell you about this new product. The stress of daily life weighs on all of us. Whether you're an elite athlete or just a regular person trying to get through the day, muscle pain and muscle tension is a real thing. This is why I love Theragun, the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combination of depth, speed, and power. And now it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. And that's because the all-new Gen 4 Theragun has a proprietary brushless motor that is so quiet, you wonder if it's even on, while you soothe your aching muscles with Theragun's signature power, amplitude, and effectiveness. This product is amazing. Listen, you've got to try it. Try Theragun for 30 days, in fact. There is no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4 with an OLED screen, personalized Theragun app, and the quiet and power you need. It starts at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/Rome right now. Get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's Theragun.com/ROME. Theragun.com/Rome. This product is incredible.
Let me start with these social beefs.
It's not too late to call. If you have a beef, hit me up. 1-800-636-8686. Starting with a lady clone, Susie from Wisco. She tweets, quote, "I got beef. I got beef with Mike Nolan's eyeball." Signed, Tabasco sauce.
Just had some Tabasco on my finger and it went in my eye. That wasn't good.
Yeah, it was. That was actually great. How about a guy on a Zoom call? Not only a guy, but that guy presiding over that defense, having to stop to say, "Hey, man, I got some Tabasco in my eye."
I got something in my eye.
You got something in your eye? It's Tabasco, Mike. Just consider yourself lucky that it wasn't Tapatio or Cholula. At Hitman Canadian tweets, "My beef is with Justin Turner. He openly transmitted without the expressed written consent of Major League Baseball." Cage, at Cage Gomez tweets, "My beef is still with Bill from Chumpa Bay. I wonder if that loser will correct anyone's pronunciation ever again."
You pronounce Tampa wrong. That's Bill from Champa Bay.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that's the last we're going to hear from him. At SA Sports Honk tweets, "Rome, I've got a beef with dudes who cry when their team wins a championship. Sack up." Yes and no, and mostly no, especially given that you reside in San Antonio, where the biggest crier ever lives. At SF Football 99 tweets, "My beef," that guy, "My beef is with backwards hat guy who uses his hand to shield the sun." Haunted Horse tweets, "My beef is in only getting one free taco today from the Mookie stolen base promotion. Me still hungry." Signed, Taco Wells in the 720. Hey, Rome, "My beef is with people who ask me what I'm doing while I'm doing it." Hey, what are you up to? Watching the game? Well, I'm facing the TV with the game on, so what do you think I'm doing, idiot? Jeremiah in Greenville. Romy, I got beef with tools that hold their coffee mug with both hands. You're not a freaking toddler holding a sippy cup. Grip that handle and finish off your dark roast loaded with a gallon of cream and a pound of sugar. Signed, Ashley in Nebraska.
War Lady Clone.
Ashley's funny.
Put that coffee
Ashley
down.
Makes me laugh. Carlin Prescott, a.k.a. at 143C1, tweets, my beef is that Blake Snell is not being celebrated today for inclusion into the Rat family. You cannot include anybody in something that no longer exists, Carl. It's a good song, until there's a record scratch on it. Garrett in Utah tweets, Jim, my beef is with the hand sanitizer dispenser. When I press down, I want it on my hand, not all over me and the surrounding area. 2020, Garrett. Romy, I got beef. When you go to the self-checkout to buy condoms for the sole purpose of not having to have a cashier, and then you can't get them to scan, and an employee has to come over and assist. Regards, Alvin DeLauro.
Dude, no.
Gee, off in Lincoln. Jimmy Jim, my beef is with the little old man who bought the house next door. Dude spends all day mowing, trimming, raking, and sweeping. His yard is immaculate, and he does it all with hand tools. Meanwhile, I've got a garage full of power equipment, and my yard looks like crap. Stop showing off, old-timer. Brent and PC. Jim, my beef is with inconsiderate and selfish people. Take my neighbor, for example. Without even asking me what he should do with his own lawn and landscaping, he cut down the trees in his yard. Now when I look through my patio window, I can see him grinding it out on his Peloton. I don't need to see that. So I politely left him a note telling him to replant the trees on his own property for my benefit, and he still hasn't. How rude of him. Thanks. Signed, self-centered in Southern Cal. Mark in Parts Unknown. At Squirrel 2. This hasn't happened yet, but my beef is Matt in LA's call later today. At Wooden Laconic tweets, Kevin Cash's decision to pull Blake Snell in the fifth inning of a dominating pitching performance ranks right up there with Pete Carroll not handing Marshawn Lynch the freaking ball on the goal line. Getting too cute cost you championships. Hey, Wooden Laconic, the segment requires you to start with my beef. Let's go to the phones. It is a beef segment. We've done the social portion of the beef. Let's go to Tony in the so-called great state of Maine. Tony, what's your beef?
Romy.
Tony.
Sometimes on my day off, I try to get out to the course with a couple of fellas. I inevitably get caught behind the school bus. Romy, I don't mind that kids use the bus. I used the bus back in the day, but things are different now. Now when the bus arrives, kid doesn't jump on the bus. Mom's is in the driveway with Johnny and Sally, and the lengthy personal hug and handshake routine begins. I mean, Romy, it's like Mookie, JBJ, and Ben Attendee back in the day after a layout catch. And then Mom's is running alongside the bus like the Secret Service. Get on the bus! Jimmy, how could the Sox have gotten rid of Mookie? And now we've got you taunting and goading us on Twitter every day? God, that's all I got, Jimmy.
My man, rack him. I just racked a beef. Tony, I love it. I love it. That is such a good call. That is kind of true about the school bus, isn't it? Like, I took the bus when I was a kid. I don't remember my parents worked. My parents didn't drop me off the bus stop or run after the bus. We didn't have some elaborate hug and handshake for anything, much less getting on the bus. I've told you this story. When I was a kid at the LA Unified School District, there was such a weird thing going on with the buses. I don't even know what this was about. When I was in elementary school in the mid-70s. How about that? The 70s. They got the entire school into the auditorium, and they made us watch a horror movie about buses, literally, like a bus that went off a cliff, a bus where some kid had a knife and stabbed himself in the forehead. Like, apparently we were all acting out as kids on buses, and they wanted to scare the hell out of us. Yeah, well, it worked. Like, none of us kids slept for months. And I remember all the parents getting together and saying, I can't believe they did that. I can't believe they did that. Yeah, so you're right, Tony. Times have changed. What's your beef? Let's go to Justin in NoCal. Justin, good to have you. What's your beef, Justin?
Hey, what's up, Romy? Hey, my beef is with those battery chucker San Francisco Giants fans from the Bay being all on my timeline, texting me saying, oh, Dodgers should have done it earlier. They've had the opportunity. They should have won already. Waving their flags. There's three flags. And you know what? All I got to say is just give them some bleeping credit, man. Come on, Rome. Dodgers.
You're right, man. I hear you, Justin. I've always said this about the Giants, especially going back in the day. I even get some of that. I even get some of that from my friends in NoCal. Like, they want, like, they're the biggest Rays fans ever. When they're not. They're just here to hate the Dodgers. A lot of you Giant fans, frankly, would rather see the Dodgers lose than see your own team win. Look in the mirror. Own that. You'd rather see the Dodgers lose than you would see your own team win. That's how you know you're blinded by hate. Let's go to Clearwater. Mike in Clearwater. Good to have you, Mike. What is your beef?
Jim, my beef is with the bum guy, the homeless guy, and I have empathy for them, but he's at the same exit for 6 months in a row. I've given him my change, you know, and then this guy, you know, after traffic goes through, he's all stomping around on the grass, all pissed because he didn't get more free money. I've even given this guy who didn't have shoes once the flip-flops I keep in my car. And he's all upset because he didn't get free stuff. You can see he's all shaking his head, all upset because he didn't get money through that cycle of traffic that went through the light. Come on, dude. You're asking for free money and you're a bum. Out.
I was going to say, Alvin, if we're going to rack people during the beef segment, it's more than okay to run them. Mike, it seems to me you're more unhappy about the so-called, quote, bum than the bum is. Hey, Mike, you know why that guy's stomping around unhappy? He's hungry. He's cold. He does not have a roof over his head. He has nowhere to live. He's homeless, Mike. This is why he's unhappy. How about you? Say you miss a meal. Did you get cranky? Did you get angry? You know why? You're hungry. So imagine your entire life being like that. So what do? You go home, you walk through your front door of your house, and you go to your refrigerator and you pull some food out, probably even a beer. And then it's better, right? What does this guy do? In your words, he stays on the same off ramp where he's been for 6 months. You know why that is? That is his home, Mike. He's homeless. Look, I understand I said you can beef about whatever you want. I take that back. You can beef about whatever you want except, quote, bums. What, like, this guy has to pay you the ultimate respect because you gave him 75 cents and some flip-flops that you've probably worn for 8 years.
Good night now!